Part 7. Reckoning. A fine speech, hairy feet, but it lacks teeth and claws, such as we have. Aesop. P-19. RMXT Studio Number 1, Manhattan, New York. Dan McCarthy sprinted outside of the RMXT studio, straight past an onrushing stream of security officers who were going in the opposite direction to flee precisely what Dan was moving towards. Attempts to outrun the sky were futile, as Dan knew, and figured everyone else should understand just as well, but he could very easily understand why people didn't want to be anywhere near what and who was currently descending to Earth. He hadn't seen any phone-based images, but Leisha's certainty that the invasion Marion de Klerk warned of was the arrival of the incredibly powerful architects was enough for him to take it as gospel. Leisha hadn't sounded like he was speculating, and he had never given Dan a reason to doubt him in the past. The fear in the alien's words when announcing that the race that had deceptively enslaved his own for so long were within Earth's atmosphere had spoken volumes in its own right, and was certainly not the fear of someone who merely thought something bad was on the way. When Dan felt the fresh air of the New York night hit his face, he knew he was close and ran even faster. Emma and Clark were close behind, with Godfrey following as fast as his older and less active legs could take him. To all of their surprise, the trio of Slater, Cole, and Geller were keeping pace with Godfrey.
"We have to be there,"
Cole puffed, his lungs struggling to feed enough oxygen to his hefty frame, but his undying desire to look strong at all costs carrying him through the physical struggle. After the air came the light flooding through the open emergency exit door that became visible straight ahead when Dan rounded the final corner, at which point he wondered if he had misjudged the time. "No," he thought, "I know what time it is. Even though the show barely got going, it didn't start until 8 p.m., and it was dark before that." Last of all came the sounds. At first, all Dan could hear were the screams and yells of people fleeing in whichever direction they deemed to give them the best chance of escaping whatever precise visual stimulus had convinced them of how much danger they were in. For most people, there was no fight or flight decision to be made when unknown aliens were incoming, and Dan knew that as well as anyone. For him, though, the automatic and unavoidable reaction was the polar opposite to that of the public and evidently many of the security officers tasked with their protection. While they ran away, Dan McCarthy ran towards. As a man who had avoided conflict almost obsessively for the first 2 decades of his life, Dan could never have seen himself running towards any kind of threat just a few years earlier. But with the responsibilities thrust upon him in his role as Earth's chief planetary liaison, and far more importantly, with the endless responsibilities he had assumed in becoming a father, there was never any option in his mind other than standing tall in the face of whatever was coming in an effort to prevent it from bringing the very destruction everyone else seemed to be trying to flee. He hoped there would be no fight. It would be hammer against nail, as he knew only too well. But there was quite simply no flight in the man Dan McCarthy had become. With his final few steps towards the increasingly and inexplicably bright light shining through the door at the end of the hallway, Dan consciously tried to psych himself up with the consideration that every challenge and difficulty he had faced since finding Richard Walker's cursed folder had led him to this moment. Every battle had brought him here, and an aerial view of the dots of his life would reveal the shape of this moment. Whatever was waiting outside, it wasn't just Dan McCarthy's responsibility and duty to face it, it was his destiny to face it. Around 10 paces later, he was facing it. Around 10 paces later, his own face contorted into a scream-like expression of shocked horror. Around 10 paces later, his eyes fell upon not a giant alien being standing on the ground, but a beyond giant alien spaceship bearing down from above.
"Fuck me," Clark gasped from Dan's side just moments later.
"Oh my God,"
Emma added. Leisha uncloaked himself at that very moment, standing directly in front of Dan and bringing all new amazement to the remaining members of the public who had gathered outside the studio to catch a glimpse of the show's guests and perhaps get themselves in shot on one of the many TV cameras present. Some of these members of the public were quite simply frozen on the spot in terror. Others didn't look physically able to move quickly at the best of times due to varying mobility issues, and a small minority were holding their phones low in front of themselves and snapping selfies. They barely registered in Dan's mind, amid the almost blinding light from above and the odd sound that filled the air. It sounded something like metallic foil being crumpled, as best as he could describe it, and was unpleasant without having any real nails-on-chalkboard effect. No one on the street was covering their ears, but Dan could tell from Clark and Emma's expressions that they could hear it too. The sound brought a natural, if mild, wincing reaction, but the sight of what it was coming from drew altogether more extreme expressions once the reality of the scale of what they were looking at sank in. Dan and Leisha shared a brief glance before moving their heads upwards in unison to take in the impossibly vast craft. It was, as far as Dan's eyes could tell, as big as the sky. It had, in essence, replaced the sky. Now, for all intents and purposes, the truly colossal alien craft above his head was the sky. Dan's eyes glanced frantically from left to right, then into the distance up ahead, and finally behind his initial position after a quick 180-degree turn. There was literally no visible end to the spaceship. Literally, in the truest and most unsettling sense of that word, it filled the sky.
"Are we rolling?" a shrill voice called as its owner emerged from the building. Leisha turned towards her, Jan Geller, bemused by the fact that her immediate concern was whether her network's cameraman, still on the scene out of something between honorable commitment to his job or utter madness, was getting live pictures of the potentially apocalyptic vessel which had replaced their sky. Without seeking advice or permission from his human friends, and aware that his human enemies could now see him, and that any need to be furtive had long gone out of the proverbial window, Leisha then took it upon himself to telekinetically herd together Cole, Slater, and Geller before levitating them as one. He held them in place with one focused hand while drawing a containing force field in the air with one of the two wide finger-like divisions of the other. Within seconds, the President of the United States and Prime Minister of the United Kingdom were trapped in an invisible box some 10 feet off the ground, with only Jan Geller for company. This was enough to take Dan's attention from the sky, albeit temporarily, and he watched with contempt rather than pleasure as Geller pounded on the invisible edges of her cage. No sound was able to escape this cage, which he knew, given that Geller was very clearly screaming in fury. Cole quickly encouraged her to sit down, knowing both that her efforts to break out would be fruitless, and also that, from a height of 10 feet, those efforts would be rather painful if they were somehow successful. Dan could only imagine the levels of embarrassment the two politicians were feeling, and he couldn't help but glance at William Godfrey to see whether he was grinning. Unsurprisingly, given all the two had done, he was. Focus 2020 had ended too quickly for them to be held to account, but Dan tried to retain faith that their time would come. They would be held to account when this was all over, if there came a time when this was all over. Dan was confident of that, but the conditionally qualifying if was giving him real concern. Why were the architects here, and what did they want? Dan didn't know the answer to either of these questions, or the perhaps even more important question of what he could do to make them leave. "Talk to them," Leisha said. "That has to be why they're here. If they wanted to destroy Earth or anything of that nature, they wouldn't have to be here. The craft is barely descending. I think they're getting ready to come out. Are you ready?"
"How could he be ready for this?" Clark replied out loud, having heard Leisha's openly shared telepathic question. "Look at it!"
With the troublesome human trio taken care of for now, Dan's full attention turned back to the sky. The terrible, awful, most fear-inspiring sky anyone on any world had ever witnessed.